It's Friday, May 3rd. I'm Paul Joseph Watson. This is InfoWars Nightly News. Coming up tonight.
Tonight, Watertown under martial law. Residents speak out. Plus, a man drinking iced tea in a parking lot gets arrested by an overzealous wannabe cop.
Put your hands up against the car now.
Not knowing nothing, man.
Sir?
No.
Yeah. No. Against the car.
David Knight gets the full story from the man behind the camera. And the DHS continues its arms buildup, this time asking for 2 million more rounds of ammunition. That's coming up next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Top story tonight, DHS seeks millions more rounds of ammunition. That's right, the conspiracy theory that doesn't exist, according to the media, just keeps on popping back like whack-a-mole. The Department of Homeland Security has released a market survey asking companies if they are able to provide 2 million rounds of ammunition within a short time period, increasing concerns that the federal agency is continuing its arms build-up in preparation for domestic unrest. And you can visit the link from the article, which takes you to the official Fed Biz Ops website, to see more DHS bullet purchases that, according to leftist blogs in the mainstream media, don't exist. And this is key in this article. They're actually asking companies if they can provide 2 million bullets within a 30 to 60 day period. They want as quick a turnaround as possible. And this actually ties into a previous report that we had, which was an ammunition manufacturer who called into the Michael Savage show to make the point, and he was selling the bullets to the government, that the DHS is attempting to exhaust ammunition supplies to corner the market as an end run around the Second Amendment by forcing companies via contract to reserve bullets for the federal agency. Then, of course, they're not available to the general public, which is why people are struggling to get them. But these are the questions the DHS is asking ammunition manufacturers in this article. Are you capable of producing large quantity orders of any training caliber specified within a short turnaround time of 30 to 60 days? What would be your lead time for an order of 2 million rounds of a single type of bullet? So they're asking companies, basically, can you give us 2 million bullets within 30 to 60 days? Seems like they're starting to panic with the congressional investigation of the 2 billion bullet buys, and they're trying to make sure that in future they can get these bullets as quickly as possible without having to kind of rely on those 5-year contracts that they've committed to up until this point. And in addition, the document talks about bullets that fragment safely when striking an armor steel plate. And, you know, I asked the question, is that normal for so-called training bullets, that they would be interested in whether or not they fragment safely if fired against an armor steel plate? Certainly some of the commenters on InfoWars were concerned about that. One of them wrote, this is expensive killing ammo. Of course, put the label training on there for the sheep to graze at ease. So people are concerned at why they're not only buying bullets in such huge quantities, but also testing them on whether they fracture safely or not when fired against armor steel plating. Why would they need to do that if it was only for training purposes? So it's not going to do anything to dampen fears that the DHS is preparing for domestic unrest. But, you know, if you listen to the leftist blogs and the mainstream media, it's safe to stick your head in the sand. Everything will be hunky-dory if you just pretend that it doesn't exist. They're not buying any bullets. They're for training purposes only. Completely normal, even though they now appear to be engaged in a kind of panic buying process. In regard to the DHS, now we're going to go to a report by Jakari Jackson about a letter from Attorney General Eric Holder threatening Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, who is trying to enforce a pro-Second Amendment law in his state. Let's go to that report now.
I'm Jakari Jackson with an InfoWars News Bulletin. The article on InfoWars.com comes to us from the 10th Amendment Center and reads, Eric Holder threatens Kansas in letter on gun control nullification. On Thursday, Kansas Governor Sam Brownback received a letter from Attorney General Eric Holder threatening action against the state should it enforce SB 102, which Brownback signed into law last month. The letter reads, "In purporting to override federal law and to criminalize the official acts of federal officers, SB 102 directly conflicts with the federal law and is therefore unconstitutional. Never mind that, quote, reasonable gun control very much violates the constitutional concept of shall not be infringed." We saw a similar situation in Texas when the House voted that they no longer desired to be molested at the airport, even if the molester wore blue gloves. And just in case you've forgotten, this is the same Eric Holder who wants to brainwash you about firearms. I'm Jakari Jackson with an InfoWars News Bulletin.
And what we need to do is change the way in which people think about guns, especially young people. One thing that I think is clear with young people and with adults as well is that we just have to be repetitive about this. It's not enough to simply have a catchy ad on a Monday and then only do it every Monday. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
And don't forget to pick up the new InfoWars magazine with 3 free stickers. You can get it all at the InfoWarsShop.com. Get them now in bulk at InfoWarsStore.com.
Next story tonight, Rush Limbaugh to be sent to mental hospital under Stasi snitch program, question mark. Given the fact that Palm Beach County Sheriff Rick Bradshaw is set to launch a $1 million program which will encourage Floridians to report on people who, quote, hate government, how long before Palm Beach resident Rush Limbaugh is sent to a Soviet-style mental hospital? And this is, of course, a story we covered yesterday. They're preparing this Stasi-style campaign in Florida, Palm Beach County, directly encouraging people to report on their neighbors if they spout, quote, anti-government rhetoric. And this is the quote from the sheriff. "We want people to call us if the guy down the street says he hates the government. What does it hurt to have somebody knock on a door and ask, hey, is everything okay?" Exactly. What does it hurt to have the thought police knock on your door and ask if everything's okay? That's not creepy at all. But of course, it's part of this increasing move to demonize, to marginalize criticism of the state as a mental disorder. Of course, we've already got oppositional defiant disorder, which has been classified by official mental illness textbooks as exactly that, a psychiatric disorder. And the definition of it is, quote, "a recurrent pattern of negativistic, defiant, disobedient and hostile behavior towards authority figures that persists for at least 6 months." So that probably covers most of our audience. You're all mentally ill for not blithely obeying authority figures and being suspicious of government. But with regard to this latest Stasi program, the Washington Times actually came out with a pretty good editorial, which is linked in the article, and they're calling on Florida Governor Rick Scott to veto the whole proposal. That's the only way it's going to get sunk. It's already got the approved funding. But if he rubber stamps it, it's going to become the new incarnation of Operation Tips, that was supposed to have been mothballed back in 2002. And if it comes to fruition, then America will officially take its place alongside communist East Germany and Soviet Russia as a society that encourages its citizens to snitch on each other for dissenting against the government. And remember this quote from the Palm Beach Post. This was the most chilling quote. "The campaign would also include public service announcements to encourage local citizens to report their neighbors." That's not a line from The Running Man. That's a quote in a major American newspaper about a real program set to be launched in Florida. Bilderberg kingmaker Kissinger jokes about President Hillary Clinton at elite gathering. Bilderberg luminary Henry Kissinger joked at an elite dinner party in Washington, D.C. that Hillary Clinton should run for president in 2016. "At least 4 secretaries of state became president," said Kissinger in remarks at the Atlantic Council dinner. "I want to tell Hillary that when she misses the office, when she looks at the histories of secretaries of state, there might be hope for a fulfilling life afterwards." And then he actually joked that he had thought up all kinds of schemes to get around constitutional protections that prevented him as a foreign-born citizen from becoming president himself. So the war criminal wants to become El Presidente, This is the guy who said, quote, the illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes a little longer. I think he'd fit right in. But for now, he's happy to endorse Hillary Clinton for 2016. And it's virtually a foregone conclusion that Hillary will now run in 2016. Of course, if she wins, that will mean we've seen a Bush or a Clinton in the White House for four out of the previous five presidents. And if you think Obama was bad, then wait until Hillary gets in office, because her foreign policy is virtually in lockstep with the neocons and makes Obama's hegemonic militancy in terms of the drone strikes look like a children's birthday party. So we've got that to look forward to with Hillary Clinton in 2016. Moving on, former chief of staff. Syrian chemical weapon narrative could be an Israeli false flag. This is Yorian Mace on Infowars.com. Former chief of staff to Colin Powell, retired Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, told the Young Turks that the early indications of the use of chemical weapons by the Syrian regime could point to an Israeli false flag operation. Quote, we don't know what the chain of custody is. This could have been an Israeli false flag operation. It could have been an opposition in Syria, or it could have been actual use by Bashar al-Assad, but we certainly don't know with the evidence we've been given. And of course, this comes amid increasing gains by the Syrian army. Yesterday, they recaptured Homs from the rebels. We've also got Obama repeatedly fudging his supposed red line on chemical weapons. The possibility that it would be used as a pretext for intervention is becoming increasingly remote, but don't rule it out just yet. And then, of course, we've got sources inside Syria, including those high up in the chain of command of the FSA itself, saying that Western-backed insurgents have used chemical weapons, albeit on a limited scale, and that those instances are now falsely being blamed on the Syrian government. So we're already seeing false flags on a limited scale, but now Wilkerson is saying that Israel could be preparing to stage such an attack to grease the skids for an intervention. But of course, it's being completely ignored, because if the chemical weapons were being used by the rebels, which all the evidence suggests they are, it bolsters the reality that these rebels are being led by al-Qaeda terrorists, whom Barack Obama, with your tax money, is now preparing to arm with heavy weaponry. So Wilkerson's warning of a possible false flag staged by Israel reminds us again, just as the lobbyist Patrick Clawson said last year with regard to Iran, that the term false flag, the whole idea of this, is not a conspiracy theory. It's an extremely well-documented tool of covert warfare. And staying on the topic of false flags, report US government and NATO worked with bin Laden and his top lieutenant 3 months after 9/11. And this is a report from Washington's blog about Civil Edmonds, who, of course, testified in front of the 9/11 commission. That testimony was later excluded. That in her position as an FBI translator, she saw evidence indicating that bin Laden was working for the US right up until 9/11. Well, now she's gone even further. Edmund said last week that bin Laden and his number two al-Qaeda, Lieutenant Ayman al-Zawahiri, worked with the US government for 3 months after 9/11 to coordinate destabilization in the Caucasus region. Of course, we also had al-Zarqawi dining at the Pentagon with Pentagon top brass months after 9/11. He was the so-called mastermind of the 9/11 attacks. Months afterwards, he's inside the Pentagon. Complete coincidence, nothing to worry about. But now Sibel Edmonds is saying that 3 months after 9/11, there's clear evidence that bin Laden and his right-hand man was still, after being blamed for the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, working with the US government to destabilize other regions of the world. So again, al-Qaeda, the best enemies money can buy, and that continues to this day at the moment in Syria. Appalling irresponsibility. Senior scientists attack Chinese researchers for creating new strains of influenza virus in veterinary laboratory. Senior scientists have criticized the appalling irresponsibility of researchers in China who have deliberately created new strains of influenza virus in a laboratory, reports the London Independent. They warn that there is a danger that the new viral strains created by mixing bird flu virus with human influenza could escape from the laboratory to cause a global pandemic, killing millions of people. So Lord May of Oxford, a former government chief scientist and president of the Royal Society, is up in arms about this, that China's developing these secret influenza viruses in labs, which is kind of rich because the Chinese are basically being lambasted for conducting research less dangerous than what Western pharmaceutical giants, what the British and American governments have been caught doing on a regular basis. And in fact, there's another article by Kurt Nimmo on Infowars.com, which documents numerous instances of that, creating, not only creating viruses in labs, but deliberately allowing them to escape. And in fact, you'll remember our story from 2009 involving Baxter. They actually created vaccines contaminated with the H5N1 avian flu virus and distributed them with the virus in the vaccine to 18 different countries right before they were set to be injected into humans. Only by a miracle was a pandemic prevented, because they tested them on rats, on ferrets, actually, in the Czech Republic. They all died, and as a result, the vaccine did not get sent out. If that test had not been conducted, it could have led to a global pandemic. So it's kind of rich that the Chinese are getting lambasted when massive Western pharmaceutical corporations and governments have been caught doing much worse on a regular basis. And in fact, we've covered numerous examples over the years. Of course, the foot and mouth outbreak in the UK back in 2001 devastated the farming community right before the outbreak. A vial of the disease mysteriously went missing from the British government's Porton Down bioweapons lab. Then, of course, we had the swine flu outbreak in 2009, which was completely ginned up, completely hysterical, completely designed to make profits for the pharmaceutical industry. That was not our conclusion. It was the conclusion of Wolfgang Wodarg, who was the chair of the Council of Europe's subcommittee investigating the whole matter. That's the conclusion that he came to. So you've got China being publicly attacked for creating viruses in labs when the US and British governments, Western pharmaceutical companies, do it routinely and indeed accidentally release viruses with barely a whimper of protest on a regular basis. Yet there's no mainstream media screaming headlines complaining about it, unlike with China. Now, Michael Snyder of the Economic Collapse blog reports on the Holocaust of jobs with self-employed people. The percentage of Americans that are working for themselves has never been lower in the history of the United States. Once upon a time, the United States was a paradise for entrepreneurs and small businesses, but now the control-freak bureaucrats that dominate our society have created a system that absolutely eviscerates them. And he goes through all the figures. Basically, since 1990, self-employment has completely collapsed. More and more people are becoming dependent on not only handouts, food stamps, but also government jobs. And if you look at the figures today, what do you find? The overall unemployment rate, largely unchanged at 7.5%, of course, it's actually around 20% plus if you count the people who have stopped looking for work. They're not officially recorded. But government unemployment is dropping. There are more government jobs around, down from 3.6% to 3.3% from March to April. So if you want to be dependent on the system, there are plenty of government jobs available. If you want to be truly independent and actually try to make the free market work for yourself, be self-employed or have your own private business, then you're going to run into problems. The control freaks, as we talked about in the interview with Lloyd Chapman, they're creating a business environment that's starting to resemble Atlas Shrugged. It's not far off from that dystopic future, as this article documents. And they're basically trying to strangle self-employment, which has plummeted, as I said, since 1990, and replace it with this shell of an economy that mandates everybody to be invested in, to be dependent on the corrupt system, because that's the only way that they can continue this charade of economic recovery. Kurt Nimmo reports on Infowars.com, Democrats move to exploit terror watch lists in new attack on Second Amendment. Having failed miserably to reduce the Second Amendment to an endangered species, the gun grabbers are busily working on a new angle, making sure Americans on government terror watch lists cannot purchase firearms. Following the failure of Manchin Toomey in the Senate and the attack in Boston last month, the anti-Second Amendment activist and New York Democrat Carolyn Maloney has led the charge. Appearing on MSNBC earlier this week, Maloney claimed gun laws would have prevented the Boston terror attack, despite the fact that explosives were used in the attack. So, Aurora, Newtown, they failed to take a big enough bite out of the Second Amendment. They're now getting so desperate, they're citing the Boston bombings as a reason for new gun control laws, despite the fact that the clue's in the name, no guns were used in the attack. It was a bombing, after all. And even after the supposed shootout with the suspects, during which they yelled, "We didn't do it, chill out," as the cops fired upon them, the younger Sarnev brother who was arrested did not have a firearm during the shootout. And of course, all this relates back to Rahm Emanuel's call for those on terror watch lists to be denied their Second Amendment rights. So they failed to do it legislatively. Now they're citing completely unrelated terror attacks like the Boston bombings in a desperate attempt to again accomplish an end run around the Second Amendment. And these are the same terror watch lists, of course, that ensnare congressmen, people with similar names as alleged terrorists, even people critical of the government. There's over a million Americans at the peak of it were on the terror watch list for a variety of ridiculous, erroneous reasons, and now they're citing that, they're trying to implement that as a reason to take away your Second Amendment rights. So it's another end run around the right to keep and bear arms. They can't get it done by Congress, so they're going to be attempting these onerous and discriminatory rules, regulations, and watch lists. They're going to prescribe you as mentally ill. They're going to say you're a terrorist any way around it to get your rights. Now, on the subject of the Boston bombings and the aftermath, we're going to go to a report with Dan Bidondi on Watertown and the police state that emerged there after the bombings. Let's go to that report.
I'm David Knight with InfoWars Nightly News. Now, recently, Ron Paul was on the Alex Jones Show, and he expressed concern about the way the police conducted themselves. He had some pretty strong language. He called it martial law, and we agree.
Governments are supposed to protect our liberties. Once they decide they're going to make us safe, economically and physically safe, they can only do this by taking away our liberties. Those pictures really concern me. That is such a visual image when you see thousands and thousands of troops, and they weren't your local friendly policemen that were involved. I mean, can you imagine all these people being locked? They became prisoners. It was accepted too easily. It was martial law.
But Lawrence O'Donnell took exception to that, and he very strongly called Ron Paul a liar repeatedly on his show for what he said about the way the police conducted themselves, going house to house, pointing guns at people in windows and houses, dragging them out of their houses at gunpoint, going down the streets in armored personnel carriers with full police riot gear.
Wait, I want to show pictures first, and then I want to show some of the pictures of the Boston police, okay? Look at this. I mean, if this is what you have, why don't you invade a country? Show some of the other ones. I mean, go up to Canada, take their oil. Look at these. These are half tracks. I don't care what you might want to call it an urban assault vehicle, but this country is becoming a police state, and it is very troubling to me.
We believe that's very excessive. We believe that that is setting a template for martial law to be gradually eased in, and so does Ron Paul. But Lawrence O'Donnell called him a liar. He said from the very beginning to say that this was forced is a lie, that the governor was just simply telling people to shelter in place, and it was a suggestion.
Door-to-door armed searches without warrant. Police don't need warrants if property owners welcome them into their homes. Families thrown out of their homes at gunpoint to be searched without probable cause. No guns were pointed at any families. Five lies. Ron Paul repeats variations on those lies throughout the piece. The shelter-in-place command, those are his words, that's what he calls it. There was no command. What a vile lie. There were no tanks. and there were no police pointing their weapons at innocent citizens.
Well, when the government points a gun at you and suggests that you do something, we call that force. And they may call it something else, but they're just playing with semantics. We wanted to add to the pictures that people have already seen, pictures that were already there when Lawrence O'Donnell called Ron Paul a liar. So we sent Dan Bedondi to interview residents and tell us what they experienced during this excessive manhunt. And here are those interviews.
This is Dan Bedondi reporting for the InfoWars Nightly News. And we're on the corner of Laurel and Dexter, right here in Watertown, Massachusetts. And we're going to go through the neighborhood, because it's a neighborhood that was on lockdown. We're going to ask the citizens here what they experienced through this lockdown. Yeah, do you want to describe in your own words your thoughts? I mean, whatever they are, what are your thoughts on the entire procedure that was done?
I think it was dealt with way too chaotically than it should have been dealt with. I was walking down Hazel Street, and a cop pointed his gun at me, and then they called SWAT in, and then SWAT came and picked me up by a shield, and they threw me in the back of a car and then dropped me off in the middle of Newton.
They dropped you off in the middle of nowhere, and what time of night was that?
What time was that? Like 5? Yeah. Broad daylight. Just dropped me off, took me out of the cuffs, and told me to walk.
And when they put the cuffs on you, did they read you your Miranda rights?
Nope.
So you were unlawfully detained from being on public property.
Yeah.
Hey, during the lockdown, did you get a message from the authorities that there was going to be a lockdown?
No, I did not.
And did they call it a lockdown or something else?
They came here knocking at my door. It was the first person that came here was a woman. She was a policewoman. She was the first contact we have with the police from when everything started.
Okay, now did they ask to search your house?
They told me they were going to search the house.
So they didn't ask you, they just told you?
They told me they weren't coming in to search. There was, she didn't do it. Actually, there were some people that came later on to do it.
Okay. And, did they command you to leave your home?
They told us we had to leave, yes.
And, did you comply?
No, it's just that I couldn't get everything that I needed to get. I'm a diabetic and I needed medicine and I had left some of my stuff here. And they wouldn't let me come back to get it. They said they'd call an ambulance.
And were they armed?
I believe that they were, because the people who walked us out, they had shields, and yeah, they were, yeah.
And was you scared at all?
Yes, I was, very.
Yeah, very. And, did you feel that safe being around these police?
I was, I did feel safe, and I know they were protecting us, but I also felt scared. I think they were very gruff.
And when was the lockdown lifted?
Actually, I was at, my son came to pick us up at the police station, and we went to his house. It was about 11 o'clock at night. I was calling the Watertown police and the FBI, and no one told me that we could come back in yet. They kept shuffling it back and forth, saying that. Call the state. State said call Watertown. So I said, well, we'll just come here, and what we'll do is if they don't let us in, then we'll go back to my son's house. And that's what we did, but there was nobody here. One thing I was very, very upset about is that when we were leaving here, the lights were on in the house, TVs, you know, and back door, they had gone to the back door down my basement, and they told me, I said, let me just close all my doors and lock up, and they said, no, they would do it. I came home. Back door was open. This is hours now later. Back door was open. Front door was open. Basement door was open. Lights were on. TVs were on. No one did anything.
So they basically left your house unsecured, but the doors wide open while nobody was home?
Yes, they did. That bothered me a lot.
And you say there's bullet holes in your car here?
Yes, this is a bullet hole here.
Are they going to chatter that quick?
And there's a bullet hole here. It shot out the window on the side there. And in my car, there's a bullet hole. As you can see, I don't know where it is. Maybe it's in the car somewhere. I have no idea. But the back window's blown out and the side window's blown out.
Wow, you said right there in the street is where the guy
was
shot, right?
That's where everything started. There was the car, the Honda, and the Mercedes, and yeah, that's where it was.
And did you witness any of that?
Yes, I did, from beginning to end.
Could you describe, if you could, describe everything you've seen from beginning?
From beginning, we thought, my husband thought it was just kids with fireworks. And he opened up the window and asked them not to because the people downstairs were elderly, and we didn't want to wake them. And someone yelled out, close your window and get in. And now I believe it was the cop. At first, we didn't know who it was. And all of a sudden, there was, like, crossfire and bombs going off. And so it was quite...
And before they shot the man, was the man laying in the street?
Not here. Up here at the corner.
Oh, at the corner, okay.
Yeah, but the shootout started here and worked its way up.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. Yeah. I can't believe it because... I was in Florida when the bombing happened at the marathon. I was worried about my kids, called them up. A friend of ours was traveling back here with us, and her husband was like, maybe we better stay. And my husband was like, what's our chances of this happening at our house? Not even hours later, here we go. There's bullet holes in the house, bullet hole there. It took like 10 minutes for this whole thing in front of my house, and then it landed over there. And I can't understand till to this day how... He got through the police and everything. All the police were swamped over there. What they did, they disrupted this entire world for a day.
We initially got a report from the police department that it was voluntary searches, but then after talking to the residents, we found out that they weren't asking if they could have permission to enter homes. They were just forcefully entering people's homes to search.
Peter, did you get a message from the authorities that there was going to be a lockdown?
No.
No, you didn't get no message. And did they call it a lockdown or something else?
I don't know. They just walk in, you know what I mean? And they say, let's get out of here. You know, it's like, let me put my shoes on. You know, they don't want to let me put my shoes on either.
So did they knock at your door or just walk in?
They knock the door. But you know what I mean? The door, they almost push the door through. I mean.
Okay, and did they ask you to search your home at all? Or they just did it?
They just did it. You know, they just came in and... They're going through.
And did they command you to leave your home?
Yes.
And did you comply to that?
Not really, because, you know, I had the old people next to me here, and I really got really mad. I told the guy to... you know what I mean?
And were they armed with guns?
Got guns and shields and everything, you know what I mean? Machine guns and everything. And
was you scared?
I wasn't scared. I didn't care about that, you know. But, you know what I mean? Don't tell me to leave my house when you have... A dead one up there, and the other one was halfway up the square. And you come here, you tell me, you know, let's search your house. You know what I mean? Come on. I work with you along, you know, but be nice, a little bit nicer.
And did you feel safe being around the police?
I don't know. I don't know. I was here by myself when the shooting was going on. You know, I'd be okay, they were there, but... we left, and they say, let's lock the doors. They say, no, we'll take care of it. We'll lock your doors and everything. We came home midnight, and everything was open. And nobody was around here.
So they left your house also unsecured and wide open.
Exactly. And nobody was around here. What takes anybody? Anybody can walk in.
Absolutely.
His door was open. The inside door was open.
And you had neighbors downstairs, the elderly, right? And did they force them out?
Yes. Yes, and not a nice way either, you know what I mean? Like, hurry up, hurry up. The old man, he wants to put his shoes on. No, come on, you know, the way you are. You know, I say, hey, they don't speak English well, you know. Let me take care of it, you know what I mean? But, you know, everything was rush. We're going up
so
the street.
They mistreated the elderly then, right?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yes, you know, I didn't like that. You know, like I said, they tried to do the job, you know what I mean? No. But on this point here, I got very upset, very upset.
Okay, Lita, did you get a message ahead of time from the authorities that there was going to be a lockdown?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
So you didn't hear nothing on TV, radio?
Yeah, I heard of something, but nothing personal. No phone calls to the house or anything like that.
And did they call it a lockdown or something else?
It wasn't necessarily a lockdown, but I heard it from the news, and it said just stay inside your house, something similar.
Okay, and the police knock at your door?
Yes.
And did they ask to search your house, or they just searched it?
They wanted to search the house, but my grandma said nobody was in there. And then they proceeded to ask my grandma for my uncle lives upstairs, and the house is a deadbolt. And my grandma said, no, there's no one up there. I didn't hear anyone go up the stairs, but they still made her give the house key and unlocked it with that key and searched upstairs and all the way up to the attic. Well, they didn't want to give the key back, but they ended up giving the key back, my grandma. They did.
And did they command you at all any time to leave your home or stay in the home?
So it was stay inside.
And did you comply with that?
Yes.
And were the police armed at any time they pointed them at you?
They didn't point, but they were armed and intimidating.
And so did they scare you at all? I mean, the whole situation?
Yeah, it was scary overall for everyone, but it wasn't really the Watertown police. It was more of like the government. I don't know what kind of police they were, but it was the Army, FBI, yeah, those people that were scary. Yeah, I don't understand the martial law for one person taking that. It's just a person who's 19 years old, and they already knew that he might not have been heavily armed to go to that kind of extent to make everyone feel a little, to make everyone feel like it was a war zone when in reality it wasn't. But the thing overall that caught my eye is that my friend on Franklin Street lived across the street, and the Army people did a huge search in their garage. But the boat was directly across the street. They didn't search the boat, not once. They didn't even go around it.
And that's where the younger brother was found.
That's where the suspect was. And it's funny because the police didn't find him when they did the thing. The person finally got to leave their house because they said everyone stay inside. He left his house and saw the blood on the boat, and that's how he was found. And, I mean, Watertown police did a great job, but I think that the person living in that house has all the credit.
We, you know, had to go through multiple checkpoints. We were searched ourselves. Other journalists on the scene were told to lay on the ground as they were searched. So it was a very, very touchy, very intense situation to be in.
Matter of fact, when we woke up, a big shootout that was done from over here and over. It was look like a Vietnam, so those guns that were going left and right.
Yeah, all your neighbors' houses got hit.
Oh, we did.
Mine too.
We got a stone door.
They passed my stone door.
And the other door is
our door.
Oh,
wow. There's
a bullet there.
If I would have kept 4 more feet on this side,
yeah,
it would have kept me in my bedroom.
Oh,
yeah.
That's when you're sleeping, too.
Yeah.
Were guns pointed at you any time, and did they tell you to put your hands up in the air or anything?
Not me, but my boyfriend.
So your boyfriend had his hands up in the air, and they were searching him?
Yes, because he came out to check his diesel on the back of his truck.
Did your house get shot up at all?
My front window and her side got shot like 4 or 5 times inside.
Wow.
Yeah. My windows and my truck. But it's fixed now, so.
They were pretty much right here in front of my house, and they were just shooting down that direction. That went on for a couple minutes, and then there were 2 more booms, with the last one just really lighting the entire neighborhood up. It shook the house, set off all the car alarms. There was a heavy gunfire for a couple minutes, and then I saw the first suspect, the older brother, run along the black fence and go across the street. Officer ran out, met him in the street, tackled him to the ground, was standing over him, and then the black SUV came and ran over the older brother.
So the black police SUV ran over the older brother?
Oh, no, the black SUV that was stolen, the Mercedes.
Oh, okay, so his brother ran him over.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And when the guy was laying on the ground, what happened after that?
He was dead.
And were they armed? Did they point guns at you at all?
Yeah, when we came out, they were all armed. And then they didn't necessarily point it at us, though, but they were just all armed.
And were you scared at all?
Yeah, of course. I think I was terrified the whole day.
And did they make you put your hands up?
When we came out, we put our hands up and they searched us. But other than that, we just walked down.
And did they ask you at all to search you?
Yeah, they asked. They told us that they were going to be searching us.
And we just talked to several residents here on Laurel and Dexter, right here in Watertown, Massachusetts, and we got fragments of bombs embedded in people's houses, car windows blown out, bullet holes in people's windows, the sides of the houses, and people's mixed reactions about the cops. A lot of people's houses didn't get searched, but a lot of people's did. A lot of people said the cops are good, and a lot of people said they weren't. And we had, we talked to a kid that got arrested and got dropped off to the town next door without his rights being read to him, just dropped off in the middle of nowhere. We talked to an older couple that said the 95-year-old lady was vulgarly forced out of her home to be searched, and they actually yelled and swore at a 95-year-old lady. But it's just a lot of chaos here in Watertown, Massachusetts. And this is Dan Badania reporting for the InfoWars Nightly News.
Now here's Gigi Urnetta with a report on the important subjects that you missed while you were distracted by the Boston bombings. Here's that report.
Hi, I'm Gigi Urnetta with an InfoWars News Bulletin. Here's what you might have missed during the incessant coverage of the Boston Marathon bombing. Yes, while that was going on, you might have missed the criminals in Washington making legal what they've been doing illegally for years. while eviscerating your Bill of Rights and stealing your hard-earned money. They are trying to pass CISPA. CISPA has been called the Patriot Act of the Internet. Here's some of the verbiage from CISPA, also known as H.R. 624. It gives, quote, federal government and law enforcement the necessary tools to combat the current and emerging cyber threats facing the nation. Obama says he's going to veto CISPA because it violates privacy rights, but we all saw how that worked out with the NDAA. Right on cue for purveyors of the Hegelian dialectic, we have mainstream media news accounts being hacked. AP, 60 Minutes, and 48 Hours all claim to be victims of the hacks. Of course, CISPA will be touted as the solution while we pay billions of dollars for them to spy on us. Take a look at the agencies involved with this. NASA, NSA, DARPA, NOAA, DHS, and many more. And here's a big conflict of interest. Senator Feinstein's husband will receive a multi-billion dollar contract when CISPA gets rolled out. Staying with the web, the Orwellian Marketplace Fairness Act. It forces business owners to pay sales tax on web sales to wherever they ship to. Ron Paul weighed in on the issue and said the Internet tax mandate also violates the original purpose of the Commerce Clause. And finally, this week in the White House, why does President Obama feel the need to push through an executive order for a presidential commission on election administration? Here's some of it. The commission shall be composed of not more than 9 members appointed by the president. Is he laying the groundwork for Michelle Obama, or is he doing this as payback for Hillary when she took it for Benghazi? Sign up on our social network, planetinfowars.com. It's free, and you can communicate with like-minded individuals who believe in freedom. That's planetinfowars.com. I'm Gigi Arnetta, and this has been an InfoWars News Bulletin.
Stick around. We're going to go to an interview with Lloyd Chapman about the Obama administration's war on small business. Stay tuned.
The important thing about the Pro One filter today is that the material we use for removing fluoride and other heavy metals now will remove the latest form of fluoride called hydrofluorosilicic acid. There's no other fluoride reduction filter out there that will remove that type of fluoride. And it's extremely important because today we're hearing more and more cities are using that form of fluoride.
We've been having medication forced on us through the water system for quite a while. Most people don't realize it. Most people don't realize the negative effects of fluoride.
There's a wide range of health effects that are attributed to fluoride.
Bottom line, why should somebody get this new Pro One ProPure filter?
The reason to buy the Pro One, it's an all-in-one filter. It's convenient, easy to use. It doesn't require the add-on fluoride filter. And in addition, this filter removes the latest form of fluoride called hydrofluorosilicic acid.
I'm Jakari Jackson with an InfoWars News Bulletin. Now, it has come to our attention here at InfoWars.com that President Obama, during a speech in Mexico, has admitted that Operation Fast and Furious under his jurisdiction is responsible for the gun violence in Mexico.
And we also recognize that most of the guns used to commit violence here in Mexico come from the United States.
Fast and Furious was not the only secret gun-walking operation.
The ATF knew. Before I knew, they knew the guns were going to cartels, and they wanted them to go to cartels.
ATF allowed a total of 3,500 weapons to fall into the wrong hands, a potential disaster.
And it goes much deeper than that. Here are admissions by people in his own administration admitting that they knew about the program.
DOJ's Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives is increasing its efforts by adding 37 new employees in 3 new offices using $10 million in Recovery Act funds and redeploying 100 personnel to the southwest border in the next 45 days to fortify its Project Gunrunner, which is aimed at disrupting arms trafficking between the United States and Mexico. ATF is doubling its presence in Mexico itself from 5 to 9 personnel working with the Mexicans specifically to facilitate gun tracing activity, which targets the illegal weapons and their sources in the United States.
One of the things that has happened, one of the changes in the threat environment, has been what is going on in Mexico.
How successful do you expect to be in this effort to clamp down on the trafficking of arms going into Mexico?
Several things. One is, first of all, you've got to interdict the arms. You've got to stop them from going into Mexico. We're coordinating with Mexico because they can do more by way of southbound screening on their side of the border. But then the Department of Justice moving their agents down there, as David said, and increasing tracing, that will help us identify who is putting those arms into the arms, those guns into the arms of the traffickers moving south. And out of that, there can reasonably be seen more prosecution of actual arms dealers who are intentionally and knowingly putting arms into the hands of the smugglers.
And don't forget, back in 2011, CBS News released documents, memos, of how the ATF wanted to use Operation Fast and Furious to demonize the Second Amendment. And now all this has come full circle as we see President Obama admitting this himself.
And we also recognize that most of the guns used to commit violence here in Mexico come from the United States. I think many of you know that in America, our Constitution guarantees our individual right to bear arms. And as president, I swore an oath to uphold that right, and I always will. But at the same time, as I've said in the United States, I will continue to do everything in my power to pass common sense reforms that keep guns out of the hands of criminals and dangerous people that can save lives here in Mexico and back home in the United States. It's the right thing to do.
People will be held accountable for the mistakes that were made in Fast and Furious.
We see yet another, yes, I said another, false flag operation carried out by a government. And if you desire to learn more about false flags, go to the InfoWars shop and pick up a copy of Terror Storm. I'm Jakari Jackson, and this has been an InfoWars News Bulletin.
We're back on InfoWars Nightly News, and I'm delighted to be joined by Lloyd Chapman, president and founder of the American Small Business League, to discuss the Obama administration's war on small business, the latest jobs figures, and the collapse in self-employment. And the website is asbl.com. Lloyd, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Good to have you. So we're going to get into the latest jobs figures in a moment, but just encapsulate for the audience how the Obama administration's policy towards small businesses in America has unfolded over the course of the past 4 or 5 years in comparison to their treatment of large corporations.
Well, I think a good example is the most recent budget he put out. During his 10-minute budget speech, he mentioned jobs 14 times. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, small businesses are responsible for over 90% of the net new jobs in America. So he cut the Small Business Administration budget by 12%, while he raised the Commerce Department's budget by 34%. And the Commerce Department is the federal agency that pushes, you know, Fortune 500 firms. So I think the U.S. Census Bureau data is probably correct. If it's correct, it means that Fortune 500 firms are responsible for less than 10% of the jobs. Small business over 90, he cut the small business budget and boosted the big business, you know, Commerce Department budget. And that's typical. In fact, you know, when you say Obama's war on small business, a lot of people, you know, don't believe that. And I always say you need to quit looking, listening to what he says and start watching what he does. And today, the budget of the Small Business Administration is less than what it was when Ronald Reagan was president. And when you look at Obama's policies, he's had very anti-small business policies. And these are just the facts. You can look at the reports like the one you're talking about. And he's one of the most anti-small business presidents, you know, that I've ever seen.
Now, we've got the job figures out today. Of course, we know the real unemployment figures never see the light of day because they don't count the people that have actually stopped looking for work. But there's much, you know, hollering and high-fiving over these new numbers today. Government jobs are on the rise, as they have been over the past several months. But, Lloyd, the same can't be said for self-employment and small business, can it?
No. You know, small businesses have been devastated. And, again, you know, I like to just stick to the, you know, facts. And, you know, the Census Bureau says that small businesses in America are responsible for over half the gross domestic product, over half the private sector workforce, and over 90% of all U.S. exporters are small businesses, and 98% of all U.S. firms are small businesses. And I believe something like 20% of the people in America are self-employed. And they've just, you know, suffered, you know, tremendously in the last few years. I believe in both TARP and American Reinvestment Recovery Act, the small businesses where most Americans work, where all the jobs are created, got less than 5% of the money, while the big corporations that, you know, are paying, you know, single-digit income tax and are shipping jobs overseas got, I think, about 95% of the money that went to businesses.
Now, in terms of these government jobs, we had a government unemployment rate of 5.7% in July 2012. That's now come down to 3.3%. So a lot of these new jobs that are being created as the economic recovery is hailed are government jobs. They're not self-employment. They're not small business. So what kind of economy are we going to see develop if more and more people are becoming dependent on government jobs?
It's, you know, it's not looking good. It's very discouraging. And, you know, I was watching actually this morning, the guy that founded AOL, forgot his name, talking about, you know, they were talking about immigration laws. And it was saying something like, you know, half of all the Fortune 500 firms were started by immigrants. And talking about Silicon Valley here in California, where most of the companies were started by immigrants. And those all started as small businesses. Those are all small businesses. So to have more and more people working for the government and fewer people being self-employed is the opposite of the way you'd want the country to go. And of course, as the government grows and more people work for the government, our taxes are going to go up and the government's control over your life is going to go up. So that's just the opposite of what you would want and where you want the country to go. We need the government to get smaller. We need fewer people to be working for the government and more people to be self-employed.
I mean, there's this article that's linked on Drudge today, which gets into a lot of stats on this. The percentage of Americans that are self-employed fell by more than 20% between 1991 and 2010. And as a share of the population, the percentage of new entrepreneurs and business owners dropped by a staggering 53% between 1977 and 2010. So why are we seeing this staggering decline in small businesses and self-employed people in America?
Well, you use the term war on small business. And again, that, to a lot of people, that might sound kind of, you know, hard to believe, but it's true. When you just look at the facts, again, I like to just stick to the facts. One of the biggest issues that I talk about all the time is that there's a federal law here in America that says that a minimum of 23% of all the money the government spends should go to small businesses. That's very logical since most Americans work for small businesses. They create 90% of the jobs, half the gross domestic product. That makes sense. But every year for the last 15 years, most of that money that's supposed to go to small businesses has been diverted to Fortune 500 firms. And both the House and Senate small business committees are heavily influenced by Fortune 500 firms. So I've seen a fairly aggressive campaign on the part of big businesses to push what I'll call anti-small business legislation, anti-small business policies. I'll give you a good example. If the listeners right now, we ask them, come up with a federal policy that how long should a company be allowed to stay a small business once they're acquired by a Fortune 500 firm? Most people would say, well, immediately, as soon as they're purchased by the large business, or within a few weeks or months. The federal government a few years ago had a policy where the large business could buy a small business and keep that status for the purpose of government contracts for 20 years, two decades. That's shocking. Today it's still 5 years. And, when you look at America again, the Small Business Administration is the only agency in this country to help out the 28 million small businesses where most Americans work, again, where 90% of the jobs are created, And that agency has a minuscule budget of around, I think, $750 million, and now Obama's going to cut that. So just look at the facts, and you'll see that the government adopts, has a clear pattern of adopting anti-small business policies, anti-small business legislation, and it's you can see it in the economy, and these statistics, you know, clearly reflect it. But the Small Business Administration should have a budget that's probably, you know, $25 billion, not the $750 million that they're trying to keep their doors open with. But it's very unfortunate. Mainstream media won't talk about this. I was watching CNN today, and if you watch any of the major cable news channels, the ads are all about small businesses. You know, I've heard this one commercial so many times I got it memorized. I said, I don't have a small business, I've got a fast business. And all the commercials talk about small businesses, but you never hear network news or cable news mention small businesses. It's almost like it's, you know, against their rules or something like that. But no matter what happens to small businesses, they will never mention it.
Now, running parallel to this, what we've described as a war on small businesses, is the Obama administration's war on energy independence in America, which seems to be a completely deliberate program to shut down energy independence in America, of course, with Obama threatening bankruptcy to anyone who tries to open a coal-fired plant. Do you think, in regard to small business as well, you know, is this bumbling incompetency, or do we have a deliberate statist agenda to literally wreck the American dream? And why are they so pernicious in their agenda to do that, if that's the case?
Well, it's certainly not incompetence. It's certainly by design. Nothing the government does is through incompetence. It's all done very strategically by very smart people. And basically, I think it's the oil and gas industry is pushing that. They're against, you know, anything other than you know, gasoline and oil. Again, when you can't get stories about this on the news. If people will watch these cable news channels, you'll notice that the American Petroleum Institute has back-to-back ads on all these cable channels all day long. They've got tremendous influence, in the mainstream media and in the government. You can go online and look and see that the major oil companies in the last few years have actually paid, some of them like ExxonMobil, zero federal income tax. I think it was 2010, ExxonMobil had record profits and paid zero, not a penny, of federal tax. And that's an example of the kind of clout they've got in government and with the Obama administration. But it's not new to the Obama administration. They've had a lot of power for a long time. But so I think when you talk about, you know, Obama's policy around, let's say, coal-fired plants or small businesses, you're seeing the voice of big business and big money in our government.
Now, the comedian Jay Leno recently joked that if Obama really wanted to close down Guantanamo Bay, he should do what he always does, declare it a small business and tax it out of existence. And you mentioned the tax previously. We've also got, you know, the likes of Google, Amazon, Starbucks, eBay, Facebook, some of the biggest corporations in the world. They're paying a pittance in taxes while the American middle class small businesses are being told to dig deeper in their pockets.
Right.
What does that kind of two-tier approach tell us about the economic system that we're currently living under?
I think it tells us that our government's completely and totally corrupt. There's no question about it. I don't care if you're a Democrat, a Republican, or a Libertarian. You got to realize our government's corrupt. I've been to Washington many times. I've walked the halls of Congress and trying to get legislation passed for small businesses. It's not going to happen. I've got a bill right now in Congress, by the way, called the Fairness and Transparency Contracting Act. Congressman Hank Johnson from Georgia introduced it. And I'm going to try to get that bill passed, but that bill has no chance of passing because it's going to help the middle class and help small businesses. And big corporations aren't going to allow that. But yeah, it's our government's corrupt. It's just unbelievable. And if you go back and look at the quotes of Thomas Jefferson, the founding fathers knew this would happen. You know, they knew it. I think Thomas Jefferson said something like that: banking institutions are a bigger threat to our liberties than standing armies. Mm-hmm. Eisenhower talked about the power of a growing military-industrial, you know, complex. He warned about that. So, you know, what people like Eisenhower and even Thomas Jefferson talked about, we're seeing it today. You know, the power of the financial industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the oil and gas industry, the defense industry, they run our government. And it's not going to turn out well. It's just not going to turn out well. And I think the government knows that, by the way. I'm sure Alex has done this story. In fact, I think I saw him talking about it, about Homeland Security buying 2 billion rounds of hollow point bullets and 7,000 automatic weapons and 2,700 urban assault vehicles, you know, to be used here domestically. And so they know that, that something's going to happen. They suspect that people are going to get tired of this stuff and start protesting. So I think they're getting ready for it because they know that there's that the people are not going to put up with this stuff, you know, for much longer.
They really do seem to be gearing up for some kind of collapse, whether that be widespread or contained. But, I mean, a lot of people cite the book, you know, 1984, George Orwell, as a kind of warning from history about the police state and Big Brother. There was also a book written 50, 60 years ago called Atlas Shrugged, which is quite chilling if you read it and compare it to the Obama administration's policy on business in 2013. Do you think they're actually using Atlas Shrugged as a kind of instruction manual? Because it's not far off, is it?
It seems like it, doesn't it? But you know what they're doing, by the way, is they're listening to the corporate lobbyists. You know, one of the funniest things that I've ever seen was Obama had a jobs council. And again, when you look at the Census Bureau data, Fortune 500 firms have created less than 10% of jobs in the last 30 years. And yet his jobs council was all Fortune 500 firms, no small businesses. And the funniest thing was the chair of the jobs council was the president of General Electric. And no company in America has shipped more jobs overseas than General Electric. So no one knows less about how to create jobs in America than General Electric. And that's who Obama put as head of his jobs council. And that's classic, you know, Barack Obama and a classic Washington, you know, bureaucracy. But I'm sure those large corporations contributed hundreds of millions to his campaign. But
precisely. General Electric, Goldman Sachs, all of them. Well, I wanted to touch on Obamacare as well. As I understand it, a lot of the big businesses are getting waivers while the small businesses are being forced to labor under these new costs and bureaucracy. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, to tell you the truth, they've come out with more and more policies, you know, for small businesses. And the funny thing is, they're considering a small business anyone that has less than 50 employees. And yet today, the Obama administration is considering some of the biggest companies on earth, you know, to be small businesses for the purpose of government contracts. So Obama's giving small business contracts to Lockheed, Boeing, Northrop, Raytheon, Rolls-Royce, British Aerospace, Finn Mechanica, big defense contracts from Italy. Roseborne Exports got over $900 million in federal small business contracts a few months ago. That's a Russian-owned international arms dealer. And yet when it comes to these policies, you know, they're just stacking up these policies for small businesses. And it's like they're trying to do everything they can to hurt small businesses and the middle-class economy and do everything they can to help the big businesses. It's just unbelievable. And of course, if you talk about this, if you try to talk about the mainstream media, you're a conspiracy nut. You know, if you just read the federal investigations about the fact that, you know, the Obama administration is giving small business contracts to Fortune 500 firms, you know, you're a conspiracy nut, and you know, mainstream media won't talk about it.
It's amazing how they apply that pejorative term to absolutely everything, and it's just a cheap trick to shut down dissent. They do it with every single topic. Just in closing, tell people about your website and how they can support your organization.
Well, my website, ASBL.com, and, you know, again, the federal law says 23% of all government contracts should go to small businesses. And I've been fighting the government for over a decade to simply get them to quit giving small businesses to Fortune 500 firms. I would imagine about 99% of all Americans agree with me. So I think people should call their congressman and tell their congressman to support the Fairness and Transparency Contracting Act, which will simply stop the government from giving small business contracts to Fortune 500 firms in the U.S. and some of the biggest companies around the world. That'll direct more existing infrastructure spending into the middle class, and I think create more jobs than any economic stimulus program that's ever been proposed. It's also free, no new taxes, no new spending. So we're just trying to help out small business and help the middle class here, and I'll have to tell you, it's an uphill battle with the Obama administration, with the mainstream media. So we'll appreciate any help people will give us in that.
Okay, we're going to leave it there for now. Lloyd Chapman, president and founder of the American Small Business League, thanks for joining us on InfoWars Nightly News.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Stick around after the break. David Knight in studio interviews the two men arrested for drinking iced tea in a parking lot. Stay tuned.
Black boots kicking doors in, man. That's what's to come. That's what's happening right now as we speak. The masses of the people that have voted for Barack Obama was groomed well via MTV, BET, and some of the multinational corporations that influence entertainment, arts, and culture. The people that control the media could probably fit right in this room with snacks right around. Monsanto's, the World Army, FEMA camps, World Bank, Federal Reserve, those who constructed the Patriot Act, all of them in bed. There's so many wicked things going on in the government that, hell, we can't even tell you. You don't have the card. You don't know the handshake. You don't know the code word. And you need to kind of get used to that. We're doing it. We're putting together the documents. We're putting together the websites and the information. InfoWarriors are going out spreading the truth.
I'm Darren McBreen, and these are some of the new items that are available now at InfoWarsShop.com.
Alert the public to Obama's blatant abuse of power with the new Obama t-shirt. Obama's Joker face on the front and come and take it on the back. It's time to publicly call him out for what he is, a tyrant. Defend the Second Amendment with our top seller come and take it t-shirts. And look at that, women's cut tank tops and t-shirts now available. Nice hat. Plus, the Don't Tread on Me flag. And now you can become a micro distributor of the InfoWars magazine. Plus, get your own copy delivered right to your door each and every month. And if you're tired like I am of you and your family being exposed to polluted drinking water, get the Pro One High Performance Water Filter. It gets rid of all pathogenic bacteria, cysts, fluoride, heavy metals, and numerous other contaminants.
So join the revolution at InfoWarsShop.com.
Well, imagine you're in a parking lot and you're drinking iced tea, and some person who's not in a uniform and doesn't show you his badge comes up and demands to know what you're drinking. And when you speak back to this individual, you're arrested for resisting arrest. That's right. Drinking tea shouldn't be a crime, should it? Well, this is a kind of Kafka-esque situation that we've got coming up here. There was a rapper. His name is Xtrav, and we've got him here. He was just filming a music video, and as they finished the rap on it, they went over to an ABC store in North Carolina and were about to get something else to drink. But they had just gotten out of the car when this incident happened. A terrible miscarriage of justice. He's now facing charges that are much more serious than if he had been drinking alcohol in the parking lot of the building that sells alcohol. But again, it sounds like something out of Franz Kafka's novel, The Castle. It is a really bizarre situation. But we've got Xtrav on the line right now. Let's talk to him and get a little bit of what it feels like to be in his shoes. Xtrav? Welcome, Xtrav. Sorry about what happened to you. Tell us a little bit about what led up to that, and actually tell us what your charges are at this point.
Right now they charge me with trespassing in the second degree and resisting arrest.
Trespassing in the second degree. What's the theory behind you trespassing? That was a public parking lot, wasn't it?
Exactly, so I have no clue.
Wow. And so you resisted arrest because he wanted to arrest you for drinking tea, right?
I guess so, sir.
Wow. Well, tell us a little bit about it. We spoke to Tino Brown, the fellow who was doing the filming for your music video, and who also filmed the incident and put it up on the internet. And he explained to us this afternoon when we talked on the radio, and then we had an interview with him earlier, which we're going to play after your interview. And he told us from his perspective, but tell us from what it was like for you to have this happen to you from a first-person standpoint.
Oh, this was horrible. It was a horrible situation. I wouldn't want nobody to go through the situation I went through. It just started off as something innocent. Like, I was really about to go into the store. I was just waiting for some people to come in just to get some bottles of alcohol or whatever. We just had a video that same day, just finished shooting. I guess Tino was just getting some more footage. You know, I hopped out the car, playing around with my Arizona, just saying, y'all caught me with the Arizona can drinking. There was no alcohol in there at all. It was a juice. You know what I'm saying? And pretty much you see what happened right after that.
Yeah, we saw that on the video. It's just amazing. And it just absolutely makes no sense, except that we've seen this pattern over and over again with police officers or some other bureaucrat going above and beyond what there is reasonable for the execution of their job. And then not backing down on it, but just doubling down when you call them on it. That seems to be what happened here. Is that how you would characterize it?
Exactly. I'll put it in the same words. They abuse authority and is looked at like it's okay.
Exactly.
And like you told me before, like we talked before, it's becoming an epidemic. I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't deserve that. I served my country for about 7 years in the military, but fought for our country. I did a bunch of things for our country just to get treated like I'm some kind of, come on now, like I'm a thug. But he judged me off what I was wearing pretty much. That's what it felt like.
You know, when I spoke to Tino Brown, who took the video, we were talking about how this kind of thing is happening. It isn't a North Carolina thing. It's not an alcohol thing. This is something that we're seeing happening to people everywhere over all different types of issues. And I think one of the reasons that we see this continually happening and getting more and more absurd in the extreme is because people that do this sort of thing that are working for the government never get any kind of discipline for this. They never face charges for this. They never lose their job because of this.
Exactly. You get replaced, get put on a desk for a little while, and then as everything calms down, you get right back to what you was doing, the same position, abusing your authority and treating people as if you're superior just because you're a police officer.
Yeah, you know, it really kind of goes back to the whole idea of freedom and dignity. And as I mentioned to Tino Brown, when we go to the airports, they're not just after our Fourth Amendment freedoms, they're after our human dignity. And when I looked at this, it made me so angry to see you getting put on the ground and handcuffed because you were drinking tea. And he wants to make an issue out of it. I mean, to me, it would be bad enough if he was going to come at you for drinking on the premises where they're selling alcohol, you know, but they've got all these tripwires set up based on the kind of the artifacts of alcohol prohibition. They have a tremendous number of regulations that are there like tripwires, and they generate revenue for the state, and they hire these alcohol, quote-unquote, law enforcement agents to go out and do this stuff to people. It seems to me it's almost entrapment to set up a store that sells alcohol and then have somebody is going to go out and arrest people for drinking what you just bought in the store under a state license. But you weren't even doing that. You were just drinking tea.
Exactly. I believe it was, as you can see in the video, I just think he was completely abusing his authority. After he realized there was no alcohol in the can, he wasn't even worried about the can anymore. Because at first, you see, he was worried about what I was drinking. He said, let me see it. I let him see it. I guess he was mad I didn't put it in his hand. He never asked to smell it. He was close enough to smell me. If I had alcohol in my breath, he would have smelled it.
Absolutely.
And so after everything was over, after he already had me in cuffs, he never even took the can. He wasn't even worried about what was in the can anymore.
And as you were talking, we put the video up of the arrest, and Tino did a great job of filming that because he went over and actually picked up the can out of your hand and held it in front of the camera so people could see that it was Arizona tea.
Yes.
Absolutely crazy. Well, now, where do you go from here? You've got these charges. I imagine that a charge of resisting arrest is a lot more serious charge than it would have been if you were drinking alcohol in the parking lot of the store that the state licenses to sell alcohol. That's probably a lot more serious charge. When is that going to be coming up for trial?
Well, I got a court date June 6th. Right now, I'm pretty much talking with legal counsel right now. And I'm discussing about how we're going to go about this.
Now, one of the things, I know Tino is trying to get the public to rally behind this, as they should. You know, we all have to stand together against this kind of tyranny or we're going to hang separately, as Benjamin Franklin said. This is something that affects everybody. This isn't just your issue. This is everybody's issue. But one of the things that would help is if people knew what their rights were as jurors, if this thing actually does go far enough, this miscarriage of justice, to actually go to trial. People need to understand that they have the right as jurors to judge not only the facts of a case, but also if they like the way the law, if they like the law and the way the law is being applied. And clearly, I think any fair-minded person would have to say that when they arrest you for resisting arrest because they tried to arrest you for drinking tea, that's not a legitimate use of the law there. But you've also got I think Tino said that you're also going to be working on producing a video, kind of talking about it, seeing about it from your perspective.
Yes, I'm in the process of doing the song right now, and just talking about it from my perspective, just being the voice of this situation right now. I just try to do something positive about the situation right here, because like I said, this is ridiculous. It's embarrassing. Nobody should have to get put through this.
That would be a very positive way to turn this bad incident into something that would be good, because you know, I think people can look at this video, they can see you in the music video, and that'll kind of strike home with them more than if we just talk in an abstract way about individual rights and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. When they see what happens when those rights are abused, I think that's really going to strike home with people.
Me too.
And so when you get that done, let us know, because we really want to do a follow-up article on that and help it to get some more exposure.
I think it's a day or so.
What's that?
It's probably going to be complete in the next day or so.
Great.
It's going to be real soon.
All right, great. Well, keep us informed, and sorry about what you're going through, and let's hope that, like you said, you can turn this into something positive.
I definitely will, and I appreciate talking to you.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. Well, it's very important to get a good record, and that Skype connection was a little bit jumpy, but we've got another interview coming up with a person who actually filmed this, and he did such a good job of recording what actually happened that this video is really going viral on the Internet. And we want to talk to him about the importance of reporting what you see in public, and everybody needs to be aware of that. Everybody needs to stand up for their rights and for the rights of other people, and that's an important part of filming these incidents. Well, Tino, welcome. We see this happening over and over again. The issues may change, the locations may change, but we're continually seeing the police break their authority, essentially, you know, go well beyond the bounds of authority that they're given and are really never held accountable for it. But tell us a little bit about the story. Tell us what happened in the events, how it unfolded.
Well, I had shot a video that day for Extrav, the rapper, and after shooting the video, we actually weren't finished with the video. We were on our way to the next location to do another scene. And we stopped by the convenience store. He grabbed the iced tea because naturally, you know, after rapping or talking a lot, his mouth was dry. And we got an iced tea and he wanted to go by, you know, the liquor store and pick something up before, you know, so we could start the night off the right way. So we stopped by the liquor store. And pretty much we hopped out of the car. Immediately I started filming, you know, because I wanted to get some extra footage, you know, that could possibly go in the video. And the video speaks for itself. It's what you see. So when people ask how long were they hanging outside the store, no one hung outside the store. You know, we had just hopped out and we were waiting. We wanted to wait for about 2 minutes, but we were harassed in less than 45 seconds.
So to give people an idea of what's going on, the ABC stores in North Carolina are kind of a vestige of alcohol prohibition. And they're heavily controlled, heavily regulate the way alcohol can be sold in the state. And when you go up to this store that is so heavily controlled by the state government, and you get just simply get out of your car, this guy who is an alcohol law enforcement agent, he's not strictly a cop. He's really a bureaucrat that works for the ABC commission. He basically runs over to you guys and is going to come after you. And we see the way this guy acts is really kind of a vestige of drug prohibition. You know, it's amazing how we see drug prohibition changing the attitude of law enforcement to basically just be above the law and not have any standards of conduct.
Yeah, and I mean, we were totally shocked when he first approached us. Like anyone would assume by watching the video, no one knew who he was. He wasn't in cop's clothing. He didn't show a badge until he actually arrested him. He flashed it at that, and I still don't know if it was just a security badge, and you know, I don't know if it was an official police badge, but we were startled. It's like, okay, who are you coming to demand to smell my iced tea?
Right.
We
right.
just stopped at a convenience store to grab an iced tea, you know. You including, who wants another man to put their nose up to where you have to put your mouth to drink?
Exactly. So it's a power trip.
Pulling back the can, it makes sense to me why any man would pull back a can, you know, under the circumstances.
It's a power trip. And here's the amazing thing, like I mentioned in the intro, it's kind of like something out of a Kafka novel. You know, your friend is arrested. He tries to arrest your friend for drinking tea. Now, that's not a crime, okay? And when he resists being arrested for drinking tea, then he is charged for resisting arrest, which is a very serious crime, probably a much more serious crime than if he had been drinking on the premises. You know, and what's the deal about drinking on the premises where they've licensed somebody to sell alcohol is that they have a million little rules and tripwires to get people, and this guy is just basically hanging out to get fines on people and generate revenue for the government and trip people up on all these little regulations that they've got. And he didn't expect, I guess he was kind of embarrassed that your friend just had a tea and not any alcohol.
Yeah, he really felt embarrassed that he was wrong. And
but he wouldn't admit it. Yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't admit it. So right. Instead of him saying, hey, you know what? I was wrong. It's sweet tea. I had a bad day. I've had bad experiences today. You guys go and get your drinks. Have a good time. Be sure you don't hang around. We'd have said, well, thank you, sir. I mean, both of our mothers raised us well. X was, he's a former military soldier. He's been in there for 5 years, served in Iraq. His mother is an actual police officer in New York. So, you know, it's not like he's dealing with thugs here. So,
let me ask you, did he threaten you because you were videotaping? Did he make any threats against you to tell you to stop?
Well, no, he didn't tell me to stop because I do know if someone asks you to stop videotaping them, you know, mm-hmm. From what I've read, it's, you know, you have to stop videotaping them unless it's an actual crime being committed. And, either way.
Well, no, actually, that's not true. They've tried to do that over and over again. And in Illinois, they actually made a law that said for each incident, it was 15 years. And they got one guy for 5 instances. They were going to try to set him up for 75 years. It's been struck down repeatedly over and over again by courts. You have a right. Everyone has a right to film the police in public going about their duty. There is no expectation of privacy. And if they're doing their duty and doing the right thing, there's nothing for them to be ashamed of.
Right.
And so, you know, over and over again in one jurisdiction after another, the police are ignoring the court findings, ignoring our God-given, constitutionally recognized rights and telling people they don't have a right to film. So I was kind of surprised that he didn't really come. He seemed like the kind of guy that would try to come down hard on you for filming as well. But you say he didn't do that?
Well, what he did tell me to do was get off the premises before I get arrested.
Oh, okay.
Told me. So, you know, but from my guess, I would guess that he wanted me to stop filming, and that was his excuse to, you know, get off the premises. But what I did was I simply drove around the curb to Burger King, which is on the other side of the tree, and I stood on Burger King's parking lot and said, I'm off of your premises now, but you can't stop me from recording.
That's right, yeah. And I think you said some other people recorded it as well, right?
Is yeah, a few people. Yeah, a few people that were on the scene did record it.
Well, see, that's the key thing. We've got to watch each other's backs. You know, this isn't even about alcohol or not alcohol on the premises. This is about an out-of-control government bureaucracy operating on so many different levels against so many different people. I mean, you know, there could very well be something to do with the fact that you and your friend were black, because we see that, you know, in the war on drugs, there's definitely racially skewed in terms of their prosecution and arrest and jailing and everything. But this is something that affects everybody. And this isn't something that is about North Carolina or about their liquor laws or about black versus white or old versus young or anything. Everybody's got to be concerned about this, because they're doing this over and over again on all different types of issues. And the big tool that we've got is what you did, and that is filming and putting it on the internet. We've got to build public opinion to get against this before we can get the politicians to actually move and hold the police accountable. Tell us what your friend is doing. Extrav is actually going to have a little bit to say about this, isn't he? A commentary and a music video. Yeah.
Yes, actually, he has a music video he's putting together right now that's speaking about the incident, you know, how he feels about it. And he's going to do an interview with you guys as well, an exclusive. He's contacting me to let me know that he's going to do it. And, you know, he wants to thank everyone for the support, because we realize that without the people, as you said, the public opinion actually speaking up, it wouldn't have made a difference. You know, if I'd have posted the video on YouTube and got 200 hits, nothing never would have happened. But because it affected so many people, and it's just like you said, listen, it's not a black or a white thing. You know, it's more, I guess black people are targeted more only because they feel like we're the easier target based on finances, and all he probably doesn't have a lawyer, you know, and things like that. It's easier to prosecute. But the truth of the matter is, it's happening to everyone.
Absolutely.
And if they feel you're an easy target, whether you're black, white, Hispanic, Asian, it's going to happen to you unless, you know, until you actually take a stand to record it and do something about it.
Exactly. I've had Jim Gerak from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. These are retired prosecutors and policemen who are speaking out against the war on drugs and prohibition. And basically, it's a corrupting thing. You know, it corrupts the police. It corrupts the prosecutors. When they can prey on the helpless in society, it's just a matter of time before they start coming after the people who aren't quite as helpless, until they start coming after everybody. And if we don't check them on this, if we don't pull this back, it is something that affects everybody. And even if it isn't affecting you now, even if you're not going to jail because of marijuana, because you don't use marijuana or something, you still have to pay the taxes to put these people in jail. And there's a big business going on. It builds the police forces. They're making lots of money by the property they confiscate. And there's a huge prison industry that has a very big lobby that is trying to get this stuff going. And that's one of the reasons why they pick on the poor and the helpless, because they know they can get them in their prison system and they can make a lot of money. They can make $50,000 plus each year on every person they put in prison. So they've got a real perverse incentive to do this sort of thing. And then on the other hand, we see that when there's these incidences of police brutality, they don't ever bring these officers to justice. What may happen is they might get suspended with pay. Maybe they'll get suspended without pay. They never get fired. They never get jailed, no matter how brutal what they're doing is. We never see that happening. And so you have to get the information out there. You've got to film it. You've got to put it on the internet. And, you know, we'll try to get it to as many people as we can. It's a really important story. And when somebody sees this video, one of the reasons it's going viral is because it has to make any person who has any sense of justice angry, really, really deeply angry to see something like this. I mean, it really does when I see that kind of thing.
When it first happened, I just want to say that I was frustrated, and you know, that's probably why you heard a few derogatory words come after a while, it just hurt. You know, it's something that hurts you to know that, hey, I'm a good guy. We're good guys here.
Yeah, right.
You may watch rap videos and stereotype and say, oh, his pants are hanging over, he's drinking iced tea. He you know, may have, but you're totally wrong. You know, and I tell everyone all the time, given the situation, look at it this way. We all love our kids.
That's
if
right.
That was your 24-year-old son, no matter what color or whatever, you would be extremely, extremely mad.
And we say, we just had the video up there where they're putting him down on the ground. You know, it's not just our freedom they're after, it's our dignity. You know,
yes.
That is such a humiliating thing. And it's a humiliating thing to be charged by somebody, you know, with the tea thing, you know, to say, let me have your canister of tea. Let me smell your canister of tea or whatever. And he's just drinking tea and the guy won't leave him alone. But it's what we see with the TSA and the airports. And they're not just, they're coming after both our freedom and our dignity. They're trying to dehumanize us and they're trying to enslave us. And people need to wake up and do something about it. Well, thank you so much, Tino, for filming this, for putting it out, for speaking up. And I know that Xtrav is going to have a great video because he can really speak to this from the heart. And having experienced this, it's going to be a great video. We're really anxious to see that.
Hey, and if I can say one last thing, make
sure.
It quick. So I'm going to make it quick. If anyone wants to get any updates from me about the situation, they can follow me on Twitter at TinoBrown315. And I really appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to have a voice. And I really appreciate all the people that watched it, that made a phone call, that filed a complaint, that stood behind us. June 6th is his court date in Fayetteville. I have quite a few people that are actually going to show up. If anyone wants to support in any type of way, even if it's just a comment online, please do. We appreciate it. And thank you, sir.
Great. And that's Tino Brown. That's B-R-O-W-N 315. Okay,
yes.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Tino.
Thank you.
Well, that just underscores the importance of recording these events in public. And although the police will try to intimidate you and will sometimes lie to you about your right to do that, you do have a right to do that. It's been upheld by several courts. And even if the police confiscate your equipment, Darren McBreen spoke to Luke Radowski yesterday, and he talked about how you can forensically get that recovered. So always stand up for your rights. The police have nothing to fear from being filmed in public doing their duty if they're doing the right thing, if they're not doing something like arresting somebody for drinking tea in a parking lot. Now, our new issue of the magazine, InfoWars, just came out, and this magazine is a real collector's item. Not only is it something that's very important in light of what's just happened in the Boston Marathon bombing, our crew went into extra overtime on this to do major rewrites because of the marathon bombing that happened just before they went to press. But also in the magazine, as you'll see here, we've got some bumper stickers. We've got three bumper stickers here in the magazine. There we go. You can see that there. And, you know, when one of the things I like about Alex is when the government tries to intimidate him and tell him that he can't put bumper stickers on the car and park them in Austin, or you've got the L.A. government trying to fine him because somebody put a bumper sticker somewhere of InfoWars, like they don't do that with Obama all the time everywhere. When those types of things happen, Alex doubles down, because if you don't stand up for your freedoms, just like we were talking about videotaping, if you don't stand up for your freedoms, you lose them. You lose them by intimidation. You lose them by not exercising them. So get this issue. It's a wonderful collector's issue, and it's got bumper stickers that you can put in legal, lawful places, and you can figure out where that is yourself. But it's also a collector's item. It's is all about false flags, and they did a great job of putting the history of false flags in there, so it's a great piece to help people wake up. Also, please consider getting a subscription to Prison Planet TV. Just one subscription will allow you to share that with up to 10 other people simultaneously. The cost of the subscription helps to pay for our bandwidth and to help to fund our operation here. Well, that's it for tonight. We'll see you again on Monday at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.